Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
Howdy. I am Lieutenant Colonel Retired Alan West, President and CEO of the National Center for Policy Analysis and former member of the United States Congress. And you are listening to Audrey Russo, my dear friend, on Real Talk Radio. Listen up, or else I'll drop you for push-ups. Thank you.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. Well, we're keeping a close eye on the Middle East and the movement of groups like ISIS, who have targeted innocent Christians to put their supposed prowess on display. But what many, especially the mainstream media and many politicians, do not realize is that Muslim groups like ISIS are attempting to commit genocide against Christians, just as the last caliphate of the Ottoman Empire did 100 years ago. We're going to take a look at this with my next guest. For my new listeners, U.S. Army retired Lieutenant Colonel Sarja Sangari is CEO of the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement and had 6 years of continuous combat deployment in the Middle East. He's conducted 144 combat patrols, 22 special forces missions, and survived 7 IED attacks. Sarja has a deep skill set in Middle East languages and cultures and understands the plight of Assyrian and other Christians in the Middle East, and now uses his 20-year military experience to help Assyrian Christians in their struggle against ISIS. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Lieutenant Colonel Sarja Sangari. Welcome back, Sarja.
Thank you, Audrey. Nice to be back.
It's great to have you with us, and we're going to really jump right into this. We're going to start with the revelation confirmed by Fox News that guns ran from Benghazi to Syria before the attack on Benghazi on 9/11. So it appears somebody was, lying. Sarja, can you fill us in on this story?
I could give you what I can talk about. Can't get into the details because of an ongoing investigation still, but I'll tell you that that's what was known as far as the fact that weapons were being moved into Syria. Look, anytime you have cache of weapons somewhere where somebody can get their hands on, and then you have a collapse of a regime. Everybody will try to, you know, secure their own interests within the region. I know that when initially we went into Iraq and we cleared out the northern portion of Iraq, one of the main platforms that the Kurdish regional government at that time hadn't existed, which was the tribal group under Barzani, armed themselves was being able to pick up what was on the battlefield. And whoever got their hands on that equipment early and often became the allies, quote-unquote, that we use within the region currently to try to administer the region. So the same concept basically applied to what happened in Libya. Once the weapon caches were exposed, everybody knew where they were. Regime collapsed. Everybody tried their best to get their hands on it.
Well, this is going to get more interesting as more facts are revealed. Sargis, can you tell us what the situation is for Christians right now in Syria?
Well, they're being annihilated. I mean, that hasn't changed. It's getting worse on a daily basis. There's no injection of money and support to go to the Christians who are fighting to survive. I have to say, Audrey, for, you know, we established the UnitedAssyrianAppeal.org in order to raise money to support the military families of the Christian Assyrians on range. First of all, thank you very much. You saw the pictures that came back from downrange for the contribution that you made financially to that effort. But even when we have the pictures that are sent back to us from the military families, we're receiving nothing more than food and basic household items that they need to survive and sustain themselves. We still have to black out their eyes because we cannot allow anything to be picked up, possibly, or intercepted. In this case, you know, even the Christians on range that we are supporting with the military families to get them food, they cannot even show themselves as receiving food from their community support from overseas because their life might be endangered. So that's how difficult the circumstances by which they're fighting and living in exist currently.
What a disgrace. You know, honestly, it's a disgrace as an American that individuals in our country have to give, and our sadly, our State Department doesn't see the need for these Christians who, what you said, is not well known, that they are being annihilated there in Syria. As a matter of fact, we have seen the videos of the barbaric beheadings of 21 Coptic Christian men and 30 Ethiopian Christian men, all in Libya, by Islamic ISIS. I say Islamic ISIS because apparently this administration is unaware that the Islamic State is Islamic. Sargis, is this, you know, these beheadings, these, you know, I mean, they did it outside. It was by the, it was, looked like it was right by the water. Is this a propaganda message to other Christians there in the Middle East that they should fear ISIS?
Well, it is. The problem is they know how to use propaganda. They got very sophisticated capabilities. And what happens is, look, our satellite imagery can pick up, you know, 24 people in, you know, orange jumpsuits on the coast of a country. So they know that. They understand that. So when ISIS does that, they're also promoting this so-called narrative that, you know, coalition is actually helping, supposedly, ISIS. So they know how to use propaganda, and really propaganda stems out of our ineffectiveness to operate within the region. And that causes confusion within the various different groups that we're trying to coordinate with to conduct combat operations on the ground, because a lot of people believe that this is a manifestation of U.S. policy within the region, that U.S. is allowing this to happen with ISIS progressing throughout the region. And the assumption on the ground is that, you know, U.S. has chosen a side, in this case, alongside of the Shia, and is allowing the promotion of Iranian influence within the region. Whether you like it or not, that's how it's being interpreted.
Yes, yes. And you had mentioned that, you know, that they have it is propaganda what they're doing, and they have sophisticated technology, which takes money. And, Sergeant, we've heard about the killing of Abu Sayyaf, who some may not realize he had oversight of the oil profits for ISIS, which is extremely, I mean, this is very unique terror group. It's all, because when you have that kind of constant flow of huge amounts of money from oil, that usually is a state, not a terror group. But can you share the difference on how Sayyaf's murder was perceived in the Middle East as compared to how we are viewing it here in the States from a policy perspective?
Well, I think from policy perspective in the States, we're showing that, look, the United States can reach out and get you anywhere it wants, especially with the special units. You know, it takes a long time to train a Delta Force operator to do what he's capable or she's capable of doing, if that exists. The reality is that from a Middle Eastern perspective, the way they do what we call link analysis, and we try to teach this on our site, Near East Center for Strategic Engagement, and we use our Facebook a lot as a blog site more. Middle Easterners tie everything together. So what happens is U.S. oil companies announce that they're going to go to Iran to conduct negotiations with Iranian oil company in the region. And Iran recently expanding its full influence into Yemen, oil-rich country, into Kirkuk, which are oil fields that are Iraqi oil fields, but really are now currently under control of the Badr Corps through their influences with the Iraqi Shia regime. Tends to give the narrative to the Middle Easterners that the only reason you use your national assets, in this case a Delta Force asset, to go and take out Abu Sayyaf was because Abu Sayyaf was selling oil on the cheap, cheaper than he should have, to Turkey. Hmm. Everybody knew where these guys were operating out of. Everybody knew where ISIS physically was on the ground. They knew it because ISIS was attacking him from those regions on the ground. The 37 villages of the Khabar River Valley, which were Christian villages, were cleaned out because of operations that were coming out of the areas that Abu Sayyaf was operating. The Christian Assyrians, who used to work in the Syrian government before the civil war began, operated in all those facilities. They were the engineers. They were the facility managers of those particular facilities. They knew how those facilities operate. When ISIS came in and cleared them out, they kicked the Christian out. They put their engineers in charge, but that doesn't mean that we did not know how the ISIS was going to go ahead and generate oil revenues for themselves. So when everybody knows this in August of last year and you don't do anything about it, and then suddenly you take them out sometime in May of this year, it sends the narrative throughout the Middle East that you're going to be using your national assets only if you're prodded by special interests. And that is not the message that you want to send to the Middle East, because if you do that, then you have lost the entire narrative on information operations throughout the entire region.
Wow. Wow, that's again, that's not a perspective that we're hearing anything about. I want to switch for a moment here to Turkey, the former Ottoman Empire, with Erdogan playing the religion card in their upcoming elections. He has been slowly but surely turning the former caliphate back into an Islamic nightmare. One clue to this direction is the fact that upon the 100-year commemoration of the genocide of Armenian, Assyrian, and Greek Christians, he refused to recognize it as such. How outrageous is this denial, Sargis?
Well, I mean, he's going to deny it, but the reality is that the United States also did not recognize it. The UN didn't recognize it. And it didn't recognize it because from a U.S. perspective, Turkey is much more important to us than the recognition of the Armenian, Assyrian, and Greek genocides that took place. Unfortunately, what happens is you also now have to tie it into what is happening in the region specifically. The two countries that are expanding their footprint are China and Russia. On the same month where we started recognizing the Armenian, Assyrian, and Greek genocide, the same week you have the passing of the requirements to cut back for the second year in a row support to Armenia financially. Mm-hmm. So when you do that, you don't recognize Armenian genocide. You don't even have representatives who go to Armenia on the 29th of last month, April, to recognize Armenian genocide. And who's standing there? Putin is, with the French leadership. Then you wonder why Armenia is currently conducting, military operation training with the Russians. You're basically pushing the Caucasus into the hands of the Russians. They're expanding their footprint in Syria. They have established joint naval maneuver training that they're going to conduct with the Chinese in the Mediterranean.
Wow.
You have to understand that messages you're sending when you do these things optic-wise are absolutely destroying your support from the lowest perspectives in the Middle East.
And what it is doing in a grand manner, sadly, is, if I'm correct, is projecting weakness to Putin and to China, which is something you don't want to do, clearly. Am I correct?
Correct. And now the reality is that China does need the resources of the Middle East. Now, how do I tie that into what, as you asked the question, where you have Turkey turning towards this so-called religious caliphate? If you show weakness, then you're basically, in the Middle Eastern perspective, is you're giving a green light for them to take the steps that they need to influence the region. How is Erdogan going to influence the region? We had said this, that Turkey has 60 to 90 days to make a decision to get involved in combat operations at the tactical and operational level when in the region. And they have already said that they're going to help and support in Yemen with Saudi Arabia. And knowing the fact that they have opposition groups, which currently the Kurdish operation groups in Turkey, their headquarters were just bombed a couple of days ago, Turkey is going to start expanding its footprint in northern Iraq, specifically to target against any opposition group that might be against Turkish aspirations within the region. They have already entered Syria, as we had predicted it, and they're probably going to have a permanent presence in Syria to establish a buffer zone for themselves. They have to do this to fight against Iran influence within the region. And the only way they could do it tactically, whether you like it or not, is going to have to be going into northern Iraq, which is what we call Kurdistan currently, and into northern Syria.
An incredible mess. Another clue to Erdogan's move toward a new caliphate is his support of anti-Christian jihad groups, such as those in Kassab, which Turkey encouraged. Yet we have leaders in the West, like the PM for Denmark, who praised Turkey for its, this is comical, for its increase in democracy and human rights. Now, Sarge, why do we see these useful idiots continue to appease these fiends and ignore the plight of innocent Christians when we've already seen what the result has been in Europe of appeasing them?
I think the concept of my enemy's enemy is my friend is a concept that Western politicians think is a good way to maneuver through the region. But because it's kind of a foreign concept to us, because we believe in democracy and freedom at the individual level, and it's institutionalized in our rights at the individual level, we cannot execute it regionally in the regions that it's part of their life. As an example, look, the same individuals who say, you know, we believe in the Second Amendment right for you to bear arms, the same individuals say that we believe in the institution of free speech, the first two amendments in our Constitution, are the same individuals who will turn around and say, well, we're not going to directly fund the Assyrian Christians on the ground to fight for themselves. We're going to tell them, you have to go to Baghdad and go work with the Kurds to give you the weapons. Now, the Kurdish leadership was here just for a week-long visit. They had unfettered access through the entire to all our congressmen, to include an hour-long meeting with the president, and in which the KRG leadership itself asked for direct weapon support for themselves, and not to have that direct weapon support to go to Baghdad to be given to them. Well, since the Christians are majority in the Kurdish regional government, they've asked for the same thing. But what they ask for from the KRG is give us direct weapons, don't give it to Baghdad. But yet they will not allow the same leadership who's trying to come up with legal ways of justifying foreign military sales directly to the Kurdish regional government to turn around and give the same type of a support to the Syrians, who need even less money and less support than others have asked for. So what happens if you get caught into this process where an institution is not established to support foreign military sales or direct weapon shipments, and then we end up fighting internally within our government systems to try to somehow justify it to do that support. So we factionalize our own internal government systems, and we destroy our capability of being able to execute the requirements at the state level and DOD level. So we confuse our own systems, and we see that at the end, what does it lead to? A confused understanding of how we operate within the entire Middle East at strategic, operational, and tactical levels.
And we're deemed as untrustworthy because of this confusion, aren't we?
Correct, because your word means nothing.
Yeah,
your word means nothing.
There's a clear double standard there who we will... When you look at the Christians and the history of Christian genocide in the region, it's incredible to me that this is occurring now. I just, if I may, one more question. Can the Assyrians trust any military forces on the ground to defend them at this point?
No, and to ask them to do so is ridiculous. When you, as a State Department guy, look Assyrians in the eye and tell them, you need to work with the Kurds, you need to work with Baghdad, you look so disingenuous about your wants and desires that it's just ridiculous. Peshmerga left Mosul.
Okay.
The Iraqi army abandoned Mosul, abandoned battlefield. The Iraqi army has not been able to hold Beji, which is nothing more than really an oil factory, and have lost it at least on four different occasions. They just got routed again out of Ramadi. Now you turn on and you tell the Assyrians, hey, by the way, you need to go get your weapons, your arms, your training, and your equipment from the Iraqi army or the Kurdish regional government, who physically came here and did not introduce one aspect of what you have been asking for as an Assyrian community, which is self-governance, so you could be able to protect yourself and fund yourself. Now, if you're a citizen in that region and they are not representing your interests when they're here for a week-long discussion, and by the way, when they were here for a week-long discussion, while we were denying the visas for a Christian nun to come here and speak about the atrocities that were being committed by ISIS against her people, we were giving unfettered access for the KRG leadership, some who conducted personal business while they were here. These will not win you friends and will not win you trust within the entire region, and what you say is not going to be listened to by the Assyrian Christians or anybody else within the region.
Sure. And again, the distrust. And, of course, the majority of the American people are unaware of this because, sadly, because of the current administration, the mainstream media has their back. So this information, which should be known by the citizens in this country, are not known unless it were for people like you, Sarchis. So I thank you for that information. But this is incredible that this just continues. And so, Sarchis, I want the listeners to know how they can help the Assyrian cause and where they can follow and support your work.
Well, for us is the UnitedAssyrianAppeal.org. As you know, Audrey, when you contributed to that yourself, you saw the results. We were able to get the money down to the multi-families. You literally sustained one multi-family household for 2 months. In this case, they were able to eat, feed themselves. Now their husband doesn't have to worry about I'm fighting or I'm feeding my family. Now their husband can actually go and conduct his security or combat operations to defend his people. At the same time, we also have females that are fighting currently. There's a lot of Assyrian females who are fighting against ISIL forces. In Syria, because the Khabar River Valley was cleansed out and the Assyrians don't have a footprint anymore, our females are fighting within some of the ranks of the YPG. YPG is a Kurdish group in Syria that actually flies a hammer and sickle in their funerals. And Assyrians don't want to be fighting with a force that flies a hammer and sickle in their funerals, but they have no choice. If you're not going to support them, what are you going to do? If you don't want to see the region be pushed into the hands of individuals who have absolutely no want and desire strategically for our U.S. interests on the ground, then please support this organization as best as you can, and we'll try to get your money downrange as quickly as possible to be able to support the multifamilies that have their loved ones fighting currently on the ground for us.
Yes, UnitedAssyrianAppeal.org, and of course I'm going to have that information for everyone in my social media, in my after show. And also, Sargis, where can the listeners follow all of your work so that, you know, because I know you posted some great information, which I was able to access, in the social media, where can they follow you? And also your website, I'm sorry.
Correct. We're the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement, Near East Center for Strategic Engagement. We do have our website and we have our Facebook. Really, we're using the Facebook more of a blog now. And we are also on Twitter. So if you follow us, you'll be able to get our link analysis and what we're telling you. Look, we said that Saudi was going to change within 30 days, and it did. It was going to have internal issues. I don't think Saudi will be able to survive probably through September. You will probably see a lot of major significant changes within Saudi itself come September. The current al-Nusra declaration of war against ISIS, which is going to push now possibly a fight in southern Lebanon between all these forces of Hezbollah, ISIS, and al-Nusra, which is also going to affect the Assyrian refugees on the ground, because now Lebanon is going to be in chaos and they have no other place to run to. Further indication of another collapse of another Christian state within the region, and you're probably going to see the same al-Nusra front cause the collapse and possibly finally end what the administration was trying to do, which was going after the current Syrian president, and the Syrian president may not last past 6 months, if that, at the max. So these are the things you can find out about. Look specifically at the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement. Follow us, and you'll see that we're actually, everything we have said till now has come to fruition to somewhat the exact dates that we have actually projected as to what was going to happen within the region.
Exactly, and of course I will also have a link directly to all everything that Sargis has just shared in my social media, in my after show. And if you happen to miss that any time, you just contact me and I'll let you know that. Thanks so much, Sargis, for taking the time to share about the plight of the Assyrians and other Christians in the Middle East. And I look forward to you joining us again very soon. And until then, may God bless you, your work, and Christians under Muslim persecution. Bye for now.
Thank you, Adrian. Thank you.